Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends. This is Nick, and I'm here with my co-host, Harry, and this is another fun and exciting episode of Hell No, the Radio Show. Hell No, the Radio Show is a socially conscious water cooler talk show about what's going on in the world as we feature some guests and callers who express their thoughts. Hell No is friendly, it's funny, it's real, and it's focused on empowering the truth. We give a voice to people who feel left in the dust. This program is not, however, democratic, it's not fascist, politically correct, or a place for sacred cows. What we do is we advocate peace, critical thought, education, reading, and social awareness. Go ahead and write down this telephone number and give me and Terry a call to share your thoughts on our discussion stirring topics on tonight's episode. Telephone number is area code 718-508-9419. Then when prompted, dial option number 1, and you'll be lit up as the caller who wants to contribute. We like that. Okay, that number again is area code 718-508-9419. Hell No is a one-hour show, and we take your calls in order we receive them, so please stick tight. In the meantime, you can always email us at hellnoradioshow@gmail.com. Also find our episodes from previous weeks on our Facebook page, facebook.com/hellnotheradioshow, and follow us on Twitter at hellnoradioshow. Partial support for Hell No the Radio Show comes from our loyal sponsors, and Terry's going to tell us about them now.
Our primary sponsor tonight is our long-term friend and incredible body worker, Ms. Jane Flint. She is, as I'm fond of saying, as good as they get. She is a massage therapist. She is a body worker, and she is in physiotherapy as well. I'll tell you, if you've never had a professional massage by a top-notch massage therapist, it is an experience and a half. First of all, Ms. Flint is at the top of her game. She is schooled in more than 15 different disciplines of body work. Second of all, there are lots of different types of massage. And with a truly qualified massage therapist, you can get a relaxation massage. You can get help with previous injuries. You can get help with current conditions. You can get old, knotted up situations straightened out. I'm being very much in the vernacular when I say that. It's really amazing what a good massage therapist can do. Over in Europe, you know, massage is frequently a prescription item. Doctors will prescribe massage very readily and for darn good reasons. They have a great deal of faith in their massage therapists and the what they can bring to the table in terms of healing, in terms of even emotional feeling, is remarkable. Go ahead and write this number down, please. 414-321-9030. 414-321-9030. She's located in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And if you're within 100 miles, as I always say, it's worth the drive. She's located at 10335 West Oklahoma Avenue in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It's just a couple blocks off the freeway. And easy to get to. She's in suite 205. One of the things that she is certified in, and very few people are, the Olympic activated stretching modes. There are only a few people who are certified to do that. I think in the state of Wisconsin there are only two. And it is a remarkable low-impact body movement that has incredible results, truly incredible results. So, once again, write down the number, 414-321-9030, and give her a call. You mention our show, she'll give you $10 off your first appointment. Get out there, feel good, feel better, and feel best. All right, Nick, let's talk.
Hey, Terry.
Did we find the gentleman I was talking to you about earlier, the Pullman?
Yes, sir, I did.
Okay, well, folks, this is a great story. The gentleman that we're going to talk about, and this comes under our heading of passing personages, which is a semi-regular thing that we do on the show, people who have gone off into the great spiral in the sky. And this gentleman is really someone who is remarkable by the fact of how unremarkable much of his life was. meaning that he wasn't in conflict. He was a man that he was greatly respected. He was loved by a lot of people, and he contributed in many ways to society, his family, and other people. He died at age 106, so he lived quite a long time, and he had just gone to his favorite church the week before he died, so he was living a pretty remarkable life in that respect. Tell us a little bit about him, Nick, if you would.
All right, let me click back over to that page. All right, so he was the oldest living Pullman porter. You are correct that he died at age 106. Family friend told the Los Angeles Times that the man named Lee Wesley Gibson died at his home June 25th. He had begun his work as a coach attendant with the Union Pacific Railroad, the height of the Great Depression, and he was promoted to being a Pullman porter, traveled the country for 38 years as one of the uniformed railway men who served first-class passengers in luxurious sleeping cars. Again, something most people today probably don't know much about. The Pullman Company ended its operations of sleeping cars in the year 1968. Pullman porters were transferred to Union Pacific and Amtrak. Gibson retired from the railroad in 1974, but continued working in tax preparation and being actively involved in his community. So he was the last believed Pullman porter. So hadn't been working in that capacity necessarily, but certainly a very important man in American history.
Yeah, and most people these days don't even know what a Pullman was. Look it up, folks. Pullman cars were really something else. They were amazing, amazing contrivances. You really traveled in luxury in those Pullman cars. I would give just about anything to be able to ride in one nowadays. I was lucky enough to ride in one many, many years ago for a very short stint up to Minneapolis. But, man, the railway used to be the way to go. If we could resurrect a high-speed railway in this country, it would be an absolute blessing to travelers. There'd be no more fighting at the airport to try and get to a flight, going through homeland stupidity and all the rest of it, and feeling like you were beaten up by the time you got to your airplane, having to get there 2.5 hours in advance just to make it to your flight, wasting enormous amounts of time in, out, and around, stressing like crazy to try and make it through this so-called security boondoggle that they have from your vehicle or whoever brought you, your taxi. You walked right in. If you already had your ticket, you walked over to where the train would pull up. When the train pulled up, you walked on, sat down, they took care of your bags, and you were treated very, very well. We don't have any of that anymore, man. And you talk about things that are missed. Those of us who are lucky enough to experience them truly miss the personal touches, the amazing rides on these railways, the scenery that you could see, the fact that you knew you were going to get there on time, you knew you were going to get there pretty darn safely. Any kind of bad railway accidents years ago were pretty rare until the rails started to get rougher and rougher. They've done almost nothing to keep those rails up. And one of the problems is that if we're going to go to a high-speed rail, we're going to have all new rails and welded rails. That's a huge expense that I think would be justified, but hey, what do I know? So
there actually is work on that with a high-speed railway line that's supposed to go from Dallas to Houston. I've seen something, and I haven't followed really where we are at it, where we are in progress with it, or if it's actually going to be built or whatnot, but I guess it's in the plans, and people from Japan are over here, so apparently they're buying. Apparently Japan and China come over here every day and are just buying everything up. People are freaking out over that, but They're interested in the rail, in the high-speed rail. I mean, it could, you know, so many people, especially between cities like Dallas and Houston, that's like, what, 4.5, 5-hour drive. That's a really big drive sometimes for most people on the flight. By the time you get in the airport and go through security and wait, you know, you're saving some time off. But these high-speed trains, you know, could really be a way to go. And I'd like to take one. I think it'd be fun.
Oh, man, if for anything short of transcontinental, it's got to be faster than flying. When you add in, you know, the trip to the airport and having to wait and having to go through everything and then having to wait some more and then, you know, the things that are now what actually used to be almost inexcusable with airlines are everyday occurrences.
There's some of the new things, by the way, in travel right now. There's a new service that is similar to an app-based service, like when you'd get a Uber car. Well, these are private jets, and they'll pay. They're some of them I think are certain ones are $200 an hour. Some are $300 or more. But for executive level travel, these things are popping up left and right, and a lot of folks that they're saying it's a security concern, and also the time savings of high paid, highly compensated individuals. The companies will find it better to, you know, I mean, that's similar to the price of first class sometimes, depending on the flight. But, you know, more and more people are going away from, you know, traditional domestic air travel, you know, if it's something for a ongoing, you know, back and forth frequently traveled travelers are looking for different options. And I can't say I blame them.
I was with folks from the Dave Matthews Band last weekend, and they prefer, as many musicians do, prefer the luxurious buses that they ride on just because there's so much less hassle. And they do have sleeping accommodation, so, you know, they can just sack out anytime they want to, and they pay everything from video games to God knows what for entertainment on the buses.
I lived in one of those things, Terry, for a while, on tour, and it's literally just like after a while, it's just like being at home.
Yep, that's their home. And only one band member, the drummer, really flies with any regularity. When they're doing the big hops, they fly, but when they're doing the regional stuff, they're in buses. One of the things I wanted to bring up is I talked to Dave Matthews a little bit regarding rhinoceros conservation. As mammals go, those of you who know me and have heard me talking about it, rhinos are probably my favorite mammal. And Dave is from South Africa, and he has developed a real interest in the rhinos and the plight of the rhinos. Currently has a hologram of a rhinoceros on it. And he's a guy who puts his money where his mouth is, which is nice to see, and he's a pragmatic and intelligent man who gives back to the community. Another thing that's not terribly common among many musicians these days, certainly not as much as it used to be. But anyhow, that's just a little sidelight here. Back to the other part of our world, we wanted to talk a little bit about summertime and things like hot dogs. What's your favorite, Nick?
Favorite hot dog?
Yeah, I mean, do you like the kosher beef, or do you like the Nathan's, or, you know, Patrick Cudahy, or Oscar Mayer, or Clemens Sausage
Company? I always thought it was cool to see the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile when I was a little kid, and that thing actually drove around. I don't really have a huge, not really into hot dogs particularly, but the ones I do remember really liking as a kid, now that you're asking me to think about it, we used to microwave.
I didn't mean to hurt you like that. I mean, really.
I know. It's like, it's been a long week. It's only Wednesday.
Yeah,
crap. So they had cheese in them. Like, I think they were Oscar Mayer, and they were the smoky length ones, and they were like a darker, more smoky, and they had the cheese in them. And the trick was to microwave them long enough so that they were cooked, but if you microwave them too long, the cheese blows up and the thing hot dog blows up in the microwave, and maybe some people like it that way because the cheese all over the place. But
Looking up your microwave is not the way to go, man.
No, I actually don't even own a microwave anymore. I'm one of those weird people who thinks they're from the devil, and I don't deal with them. But well, we had hot dogs. I'll tell you what.
Now I know how to freak
dogs,
you out late at night.
Microwave food. Microwave food, like eating microwave food out of a plastic container is microwaved in. That's like holding me over the edge, you know. But This I was at a 4th of July, or I should say Independence Day. Here in Texas, everyone made a big deal about that. Independence Day, it's not just 4th of July, it's Independence Day. So anyways, the guy came off from the grill, and he had his big platter of hot dogs. I mean, it was like everybody at this backyard party. It's like a camp-out music fest at this one guy's house, and he's got lakefront property. The place is just a good time. And so the guy is walking over from the pool area with his tray about, like, I don't know, 50-some hot dogs, and everyone had eyes on him, and he was the popular man for the moment there. But hot dogs are good. People like them. There's how many can you eat? There's hot dog eating contests in Chicago.
It was right on the 4th of July. They had a hot dog eating contest in New York, which is a traditional thing. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Nathan's participates in that by providing the dogs. I've never been fond of Nathan's hot dogs. I was first introduced to them by Neil Diamond, of all people. And, you know, they were okay, but they mess with the meat too much. My favorites are private label, sort of. They come from Polish Deli, and they're really wonderful, natural casing, probably more properly known as a wiener or, I can't think of the Polish word that they use for it, but no, it's not a kielbasa. It is truly a hot dog or weenie. But what the hell? It's summertime. Let's have a little fun with it and get your kids out there. Teach them some things. Get them out in the woods. Show them some things. Show them some animals. Show them some plants. Learn about it. Do a little gardening with them. Do some things that have nothing to do with video games or the internet. We are always advocating getting the kids out and teaching them. If you know a skill, if you know how to carve, if you know how to work on an engine, if you know how to do woodwork, you know how to do metalwork, you know how to do any sort of art, crafty, any of that stuff, teach your kids. Teach them. You have an obligation.
Teach them, teach them cars. That's so basic. How to do basic things on cars. I am telling you, I've got a 97 Chevy Tahoe, and I'm half thinking I'm not going to sell it to this kid. There's a, I don't know how old he is, but he can't be more than 22, 23 years old. I put an ad out there selling this Tahoe. It's an extra car. I don't need it, you know, and this guy really wants it. And I told him, I said, well, it's been sitting for a while, and it needs plugs and wires switched out, and then it needs an oxygen sensor before it'll pass emissions so you can get it registered here in Texas and all this. So needs some work, and he's asking, well, how much is it going to cost to have all this done? He wants to. So now I'm going to do it myself. And for this kid, the way I was just explaining plugs and wires, this kid had no idea what I was even talking. And this is, like, basic, what I think is basic auto mechanic stuff. And I'm not, you know, I'm one of those white-collar, fancy prep school people. You know, I mean, and I can do this stuff. And it, you know, it shouldn't be that.
I'm not sure how fancy you really are, but we'll call you.
Well, I used to be kind of fancy. I was a long time ago,
really?
Man. I was pretty. Oh yeah, before I entered the real world and realized I can't afford to be fancy. But
the chiffon slips and the whole thing.
God, I don't even know what that means.
Six inch. Oh my God, I can't picture it.
No, not like that. Not like
Chad
Hoover. Some of the weird swinger people around the Dallas. I don't. For some reason, swingers is a big thing around here. I don't know. It freaks me out. I think they're all going to catch.
They don't have
anyways.
Anything better to do, man.
I guess not. I mean, except each other.
What the hell? You know, they're not hurting anybody.
They're
having a good time.
We're
careful
you know.
About diseases. You know, we want to be. We always want to be counseling people about watch out.
Always
want to
be careful.
Lost
my train of thought what you were talking about. The kid can't.
Speaking of trains, talking about Pullmans.
Planes, trains, automobiles, not being able to fix cars. It just, if you get your kids outside, do things like change the tire, show them how to do a flat. And the problem is, again, it's not that this kid is mechanically inept. It's that they're the generation of, they don't have to learn things. They access things. And the, you know, working on cars, things that used to make boys into men, it's not happening anymore. And it's just kind of an odd thing. But speaking of vehicles and transportation, we have a feel-good story to talk about in the world of transportation. Terry, let's talk about this taxi driver, man. This is a really good story.
Well, for for those of us who are long-term listeners, you know that we have a very eclectic show. And for those of you who are new listeners, we have a very eclectic show. This happened in Chicago just a couple days ago. There's a taxi driver. And at the end of the evening, he was cleaning out his taxi, and he found $187,000 in cash. And he was, of course, taken aback pretty seriously. But he did the right thing. He went and took it to a police station, and they traced his fare back, found the guy who owned the $187,000. Turned out he was a homeless man who had inherited it very, very recently. The homeless guy turned around and gave him a single $100 bill, which I think is pretty damn penurious. Wow. If I had lost that kind of money, that taxi driver would have had, at least had a couple grand in his pocket when he walked away for his honesty and being a wonderful person. But this guy did the right thing. They interviewed him. Kind of gravelly sounding guy, just like one of the old time taxi drivers, and said, you know, I had to think about it a little bit, but I didn't think too long and took it in and we found him and so on and so forth. So hell yes for the taxi driver for being a good guy, and hell no for the homeless guy for not rewarding him properly.
Right, exactly. You know? Well, now
wow,
I'm gonna
come on.
Like the point counterpoint here, I'm going to offer up that, in my opinion, most people are not homeless because they think it's fun. They're not homeless because they want to be world travelers. They're not homeless because they enjoy the freedom of living out of a shopping cart necessarily. I think a lot of them have mental illness, and the guy probably, the homeless man may have thought that $100 was, you know, the value of, you know, it's kind of like when grandma gives you, you know, here's $5 for your birthday. Don't spend it in one place. You're like, Grandma, I couldn't even get anywhere to spend it with $5. But, you know, I just think this is a good story because so many of us think, all right, I found this money. I mean, I would look around for cameras. Am I on I can't even remember the name of the program anymore. It's you're on Candy Camera. Am I on Candy Camera? No. Is there one of these taxi cab confessional shows? No. Is there someone following me? Is this like a test of wits to see, well, you know? But I would be so paranoid, I would probably turn in the money. But I would also think, if I turn in this money, what is the likelihood that law enforcement, wherever you are, is just going to confiscate it? I mean, how do you find, what
yeah,
do you
they
do
put
that out
all
an APB?
Time.
You know, who lost 187 grand in the back of a cab? You know, please step to the front of the line. Do you know how they found the guy? I'm asking literally. How, do you know?
I don't know exactly what they did. I know they traced them back through the fares and the location and so on because the taxis all have GPS units on them now.
I
don't know the exact details of it. But, you know, again, you and I spoke about this before the show. You'd want to make damn sure that somebody else witnessed what you were doing so that it wouldn't disappear into the wonderful blue horizon of our police land. Wow.
All of a sudden you get in charge. The person says, I left $188,000. There's a thousand missing. All of a sudden you're in jail.
The implications are, of course, nothing that we haven't talked about many times on the show. And I'm not going to go into this because it's not the time to do it, but you and I were talking about another situation today that belied the incredible corruption going on in our cities and states. Just unbelievable within the so-called legal system. Wow. When I announce this on the show, if you aren't staggered, man, I don't know what's wrong with you, but I'm not going to do it this week. I have to make sure that all our ducks in a row before I break this story.
Meanwhile, I'm going to take a caller that we have sitting out there and ask our caller whose telephone number ends in the digit 6838. Caller, where's the first place you would go if you found $187,000 in the back of a taxi cab?
I had to think. I would get it home as fast as I could, and I would get it hidden.
Right, buried in the backyard. That's what I was. I forgot. I was going to say that about the homeless man. You know, or the person. Mm-hmm. If I just, but you're buried in the backyard. You don't carry it around in a cab with you if you're homeless. But you know, it's yeah, kind of a
coffee
freaky.
In the backyard.
I put it in the backyard probably. Because just like Nick said, you cannot convince me that it's not going to walk out the back door with law enforcement.
Well, yeah.
Right.
Nick and I both agree on that. We've had plenty of experience along those lines and know what sort of corruption exists there. And again,
mm-hmm.
we will qualify this by saying not all cops are corrupt. But unfortunately, there is a huge, huge number who are unbelievably corrupt. And with the militarization of our police forces, it's only getting worse.
Well, and so, here's another thing, too. It's not only local, it's on the national level, and I just want to dispense of this quickly because I'm so tired of hearing about it. I'm not surprised. My brother is a huge Trump fan. I was a Ted Cruz supporter. I voted for Ted. I will vote for, you know, my personal choice. Well, at any rate, my brother was really hoping that Hillary Clinton would get sent up the river on this, and she didn't. I've said for all along there's no way that they're going to convict her. Because here's a couple things that I thought. Okay, so if she got this email problem, she's been emailing back and forth with a lot of different people, and if they're gonna you know, pull the guilty flag, you know, on her, where else is that going to go? And so the interesting alternative theory is they're going to nail their foundation, their charity, Clinton Global Initiative, with some things, and it might be interesting. But I've been saying to people, like the people who are all my Facebook lit up with all this, you know, celebrate America, 240 days plus one day. That's how long we made it. And, you know, goodbye to the rule of law, blah, blah, blah. I will say this, folks. The Supreme Court's decision with the gay rights, that decision that came out a year ago, is way, way more shocking. You know, to be finding fundamental rights and basically pulling them out of a rabbit hat is a very different deal than, you know, this. I don't know, anyone who really thought that she was going to get indicted. I mean, I don't know. I mean, everyone can be hopeful, but I just didn't think it was going to happen. What I keep telling people is this, you know, if you are that upset about everything going on in politics, get out from behind your keyboard and from out behind your computer and go and do something and make a change. Join a group. Be a political activist outside of just being on Facebook. And number two, the world will continue to spin after the election. It always has done this. And things that have happened in years back, which is why I think we need to teach kids more about American history, this is not like the first and foremost time that there's been a miscarriage of justice in many people's opinions. And if people were able to go back in history, some of the things that happened many, many years ago would blow the socks off of people who think that this is the worst thing that's ever happened in the world.
Well,
so obviously,
yeah,
about it.
We need to also back up and go to reality, which is the thing that was missing from this was criminal intent. You know, I cannot in a million years, I have no fondness for Hillary Clinton, absolutely none whatsoever. I think she's gone down some pretty bizarre pathways, especially in the last few years. But I can't envision her having criminal intent to sell out the country, you know, and they've made this big brouhaha about this. And it's just such horseshit. You know, we don't need that. If people get focused on this, oh, she should have had this, she should have had, no, she shouldn't have. She screwed up. She did some stupid things with her email. And if we were to take members of Congress and filter through their emails, I wonder how many others would have probably worse problems.
Well, right. That's what I was saying. I mean, we'd be going down the rabbit hole. It's an issue, though. It's an issue of judgment, I think, Terry. Don't you think it's an issue? You know,
of course,
if you want, I mean, it may not be illegal to have bad judgment, but is this someone that you really want to put your vote for? You know, someone who is in the office of a secretary has a highly, you know, important position to have good judgment. And good judgment is what we should be concerned about. You know, we're so sitting here spinning around about whether there was a crime or enough to, you know, lock her away. I mean, it's an issue of judgment.
What
people
a waste
just
of our time. Start looking at what you can do as opposed
correct
to hey, how are we going to vilify her? How are we going to destroy her? This and that. It's wrong. It's stupid. You know, it is a sad comment on so many of the people in this country right now. Rank ignorance and, again, vituperation, meaning more to them than justice and sensibility. No thinking. Well, I have a question for you, Nick. When was the last time you were on a picnic?
On a picnic?
Yeah, on a picnic.
Potentially it was this Monday for 4th of July, but that was a backyard to get together, you know, everybody bring a dish to pass.
Okay.
It's close, but picnic with a picnic basket. I don't know when the last time. You know, I bought my mother a picnic basket for Mother's Day 1 year, and I don't know if she ever used it, but it's a really cool picnic basket.
Yeah, but she already had a couple basket cases anyway, so what the hell?
No, so what am I supposed to stack it up with the rest?
But this is all leading up to a song for the evening. And it's a song by Jonathan Richmond and the Modern Lovers. Man, the one problem with picnics are the bugs. You know, sometimes they get the better of it. And here's a little offering from Jonathan Richmond, the Modern Lovers. Hey there, little insect.
Hey there, little insect. Don't scare me so. Don't land on me and bite me, no. Hey there, little insect. Please calm down. Then we'll have fun and fool around. One, a two, a one, two, ready, go! I say, hey there, little insect. Don't scare me so. Don't land on me, baby. And bite me low. I say, hey there, little insect. Please calm down. That we'll have fun and fool around. I say, hey there, little praying mantis. I have what to play. Each time on my arm you landed, it makes me faint. I say, hey there, little insect. Please calm down. That we'll have fun. Fool around. Play catch and stuff. Oh, now I don't want to worry there, insect. I don't want to fight. Fool around. I say, hey there, little hornet, buzzing around me. It sounds like a warning and it's kind of scaring me. Well, hey there, little insect, please calm down so we can have fun and fool around. I don't want to worry there, insect. I do not want to fight.
Hey there, little insect. Hey there, little insect.
That's right. I don't even want to worry about an insect bite.
Hey,
I don't.
Hey there, little insect.
See, I don't want to worry. So please calm down. So we can have fun and fool around.
Little Insect by Jonathan Richmond and the Modern Lovers. For those of you who are not Jonathan Richmond dyed-in-the-wool type fans, want to learn more about him, you might consult the soundtrack from the movie Something About Mary. He did the whole soundtrack for that movie. He's been around a long time. He's off the East Coast, and he's done some very eclectic music, including the song you just heard, and Abominable Snowman and Supermarket, and lots of other fun stuff. Hey there,
we did Abominable.
Jonathan Richmond. Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we did. Abominable Snowman was actually on July 8th last year.
Yep.
And I was looking through my music folder. I thought, huh, how come it's got the 8th as a date? And I'm looking, it's the 6th. What's going on? And I realized,
that was
a year ago.
All right. Onward we go. Let's grasp our next topic so people think we actually know what we're doing. Isn't that a surprise?
I have a good one to dispense of quite quick. It's a big murder mystery. Who done it? Well, I'd say the DNA found out who done it. But
I need you to who done it. My phone is acting up. I'm going to have to get back with you in just like 2 minutes to switch off here. Okay.
I'll tell the story then.
You do that, man.
Okay, I'll pull you back in. So I went to one of my local political events and ran into a judge friend of mine, and I said, "Hey, judge, what do you got going on? Any good court cases?" Because sometimes I go and I listen to, just different trials and, you know, whatnot if something cool's going on. And he said, "You know, I've got this really interesting cold case from back in the 80s. So there was a body found, a murder at a local hotel here in Denton, Texas, back in the 80s. And I think it was the early 80s. And anyways, through DNA testing and the wonders of science, there was a match. And there's a match to the DNA that was on the murder weapon, which was a bloody, bloody knife. And so there was a match, and it was a guy who was living in Iowa. So Texas Rangers went up to Iowa to get their man, and they brought him back in. And, this is 30-plus years later, and this guy is on murder case for murdering this other guy in the hotel. And what ended up happening, I'll bring Terry back in. All right, Terry, just catch you back up to speed. We're talking about this.
Did you miss me?
I got you. I'm terribly.
Oh,
I almost got through a whole little story.
First time I've had to do that, but I apologize to everyone. Having some battery issues here.
All right, well, my cold case, I was explaining that DNA evidence, they were able to locate the suspect of a murder from the 1980s. So they go and they haul this guy in from Iowa, and this judge friend tell me about it because it's in her courtroom. And she said the guy just seems like anyone's neighbor, just any old regular person, just a normal guy. And what had transpired in the murder trial was the man had testified that he was at some hotel with another man, and the guy was raped, and he had been. And so another person who was staying at this hotel, this is like 30 years ago, she remembers there were two gentlemen who were, drunk and making noise and whatnot, and she didn't think too much of it. But she remember hearing someone scream rape and help me, rape. And she thought, and she testified in this murder case, that she thought maybe it was just people joking around or whatnot. Well, it turns out this guy testified that yes, the person was raping him, and he murdered him and took off. And apparently, at the time in the early 80s, here in small town rural Texas, not a place where not something you really want the guy who got raped.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just not a very thing. Who knows? Maybe that's why I moved to Iowa. But at any rate, it was self defense, and the jury acquitted him. And it was, and I said to my friend, the judge, I said, she said the same thing. It was just amazing. She said the man thought for 30 years. He said he knew one day that someone was going to come for him. And I don't know if it was, later when they found out, DNA technology and all this. But he said he always knew that one day he'd be brought to justice for this. And it just turned out that he was acquitted and was just like this nice guy next door to most people's appreciation of him. And I said to my judge, I said, you know, this has got to be one of those times that your job is so worthwhile, and this is what makes it palatable to sit through all the, you know, no paid child support cases and every all the other ugly stuff that most judges have to deal with. But so, yeah,
and
very interesting case.
It is very interesting case. And the other thing that I will do is I will jump in one more time, ad nauseum, I know, but I will again go on record saying that judges should never be appointed, judges should never be elected, judges should be hired, and they should be trained. And they should all be trained the same way, and they should be made knowledgeable about the law in a way that is germane to the job, and they should have a careful oversight over what they are doing. How in the world have we gotten along many years with one whacked out judge after another, complete inconsistency in the way things are brought forward? You talk to any attorney and they say, oh, you know, I don't want to get in front of that judge because he's this. Let's look for this judge and see if we can get him for that. There shouldn't be anything like that. There is no justice in that. You know, it is a joke. It's an absolute pathetic holdover from God knows what early American times. It's actually before American times. It's a joke. And I was just talking to an attorney today about that. And he kind of looked at me like deer in the headlights. He said, that's a really good idea. And it's like, you know, hey, come on, Dave, haven't you thought of this before? Wow. Anyway, that's my soapbox issue with that. All right, let's move rapidly onward to one of our other topics. We rarely make all of our topics, so we often have carryovers. But let's talk about something else. Now, what else have we got? Oh, little update on our friend the python in Australia from last week. The
mm-hmm.
large amethystine python. I guess the lady actually went to visit him. I just checked on this a few minutes ago. The lady went to visit him where he's living right now, and because he was very close to a record size, he's quite a prize animal, and he was also in very good condition. So she went to visit her friend Monty. And what a nice thing. The lady was, a good solid Aussie lady from the semi-outback area. And she missed her bug.
That's a nice follow-up
background?
Story. Oh, no,
yeah.
Just text messages. But that's a nice story about that snake. I have an interesting thing. I have a feeling that the former mayor of my town who died like in February, I think she's haunting me and she's coming in the form of water moccasins. So, but I guess that's my own thing to deal with. Which reminds me that the grass was so tall that I saw this snake. I thought, you know what, Nick, the grass is getting too long. Time to cut that grass. And I put it on that lowest setting and, you know, I may try to cut the lawn down good. Keep the snakes out there. But Terry will tell you lawns are bad news. What about lawns, Terry?
Bad juju. Lawns, we talked about this before on the show, but I wanted to bring it up again because of the time of year that it is for most folks. Lawns are one of the worst things that we can do other than paving things over. Lawns are monocultures, meaning it's a single plant. Nature abhors monocultures. You don't have a normal anything living in monocultures. This is an artificial environment that we create. It is not good for the environment. It's not good for the animals. And about the only thing that benefits from it, other than occasionally the earthworms and the bunnies that like to eat the tender grass, are the golf courses, which are another ecological abomination. Yes, I know you golfers hate me for saying that, but it's true. The amount of damage that's done by golf courses is almost incalculable between the water that they suck out of the groundwater supply to provide irrigation for these places, the chemicals that they dump on it to try and make grass grow where it wasn't meant to, and the stuff they also dump on it to keep any other form of plant from surviving. Also very bad news. And the terraforming that they do that's completely unnatural, so they can make it with all their little sand traps, fake pools, et cetera. Yeah, lawns are not a good thing. And when I was doing a TV show at one point in time, they asked me if I could change one thing in the United States, what would it be? And I said, abolish lawns, get rid of them. And they said, okay, what's the second thing you would do? No more roads. Whatever roads are there, stay there, but no more new roads. And there was a gentleman in Florida who for a very long time campaigned on that. And he had some very interesting statistics, getting rid of any unused roads and not adding any more because we have paved over way, way too much of the world that we live in.
Well, it affects. I noticed when I watch the news and the weather that it's always a couple degrees warmer in Dallas than it is out in the sticks where I am.
You
because of all the concrete, and it retains the heat. And sorry, I had a bad office helper for a second there. Very naughty office helper. Walking over my keyboard is not recommended. So, anyways, something about grass and lawns. My area is built in the kind of like the late 60s, early 70s, prior to a lot of the sod as we know it today, and everything's natural, and it's more like just pasture, whatever grows. And I think it's cool because different times of the year, different months, I'll have different stuff. I get baby's breath sometimes. We'll get literally wheat will grow, stickers, of course, in the spring. There's a certain point where we are full of insects, little caterpillar larvae. I mean, per square foot, you know, hundreds of them. I mean, all sorts of my lawn. It's a lawn or pasture, whatever you want to call this. Part of it's, you know, I cut, but it's a real living ecosystem. And then if I walk in one of these recently built subdivisions in our town, it's freaky creepy. This grass, I don't know what it is. It looks like plastic. I've actually stopped and like bent down and like see if it's actually real or not. And they like cut it in absolute perfect squares. They edge it in these absolutely perfect little molded. It's just the weirdest stuff. I don't like it.
It is.
Doesn't sit well with me.
That,
it freaks me out.
All of that goes back to jolly old England too. They were the ultimate lawn keepers and creators and designer garden people. And again, we learned a lot of their bad habits. There's no question about it. If you're interested in ecology, folks, change your lawn into something that's got growth of natural flowers found in the area. And if you want to put some pretty stuff in there that's not native, that's okay too, as long as it doesn't spread and do any damage. But give the animals a place to live, for God's sake. I've brought this up before on the show, and I'm going to say it one more time. We have no concept of how many thousand animals we destroy when we knock out 1 acre of land. We are killing off and destroying thousands of animals, not to mention the plants. Think about it before you go out there and rape the land anymore. Please think about it. We're seeing more and more of the folks who have, raised their middle finger to the cities where they don't want you to do anything creative. They want everybody to have a lawn. And some of these folks are really putting in some very nice prairie-type gardens and rock gardens that are much more eco-friendly, much, much more eco-friendly than lawns. Not to mention they don't have to cut the damn things and waste a lot of energy and waste a lot of time and, buy expensive mowers. So onward and upward, Nick. What's next? Who's next? Do we have any other callers? Anybody else want to talk to us?
Yeah, let's ask our caller what maybe she thinks about some of the concepts of planting gardens instead of full lawns or even percentages of zero scaping, and then to be really daring to talk about the balance between watering restrictions and we always see this where the cities will tell you you're not allowed to water this, that the HOA will certainly fine you if you don't if you don't have the perfect grass. It's just a mess. I don't know.
Yeah. Really a pain in the ass.
Is she out there? Does she have thoughts on lawns?
Yeah, I have a thought.
She's still with us. She has a pulse.
Being the lazy yard keeper that I am, screw lawns. I mean, I don't even know.
There we go.
Why did we even come up with that? I like rocks. rock gardening, naturalize the landscape. And when I say naturalize it, don't disrupt it. You know, build around it. And, you know, the less maintenance, the better it is for everybody, including myself.
Absolutely.
So those are my thoughts.
All of the little guys that you're going to come out and see visiting your plants and pollinating them, make it all worth it. And who knows what you're all going to see working in there. I'm going to throw one thing in here, folks, that Nick and I had not discussed. This is a left turn for him on reality, but I'm doing it anyway. Two people in the last week died in Minnesota from tick bites. And when they investigated these tick bites, it turns out it's the same organism that causes Lyme disease, only it looks like it has been genetically turbocharged. And what happens is it gets into the heart and just plain stops it. This is very serious stuff. And again, boils down to us not being able to manage our wild animals properly, get rid of our predators, and the next thing you know, the deer populations are exploding, and they become a virtual petri dish for disease. This new version of Lyme disease is really frightening stuff. If you're going outside and you're in areas where Lyme disease occurs, and now it's most of the country actually, please make sure that you have done something to protect yourself against tick bites. When you come in, check yourself thoroughly. Tea tree oil is one of the few things that will actually kill a tick, and it's much better than anything else out there. I made this discovery years ago, and I've told everyone I know, but get some pure tea tree oil. The best stuff on the market is made by Thursday Plantation, like Thursday, the day of the week. They have a very, very high-grade tea tree oil. Paint the tick with it, it'll be dead in 3 minutes. And it also will not regurg from the oil, which is what happens if you apply heat to a tick or squeeze it. You have much less chance of infection at that point by anything. So please, please, please understand that tick-borne illness is on the rise, and some of what they're carrying is just plain fatal.
How big are they? I mean, how big? I'm not sure that I've ever had a tick on me before. But I imagine they're. I mean,
I'm sorry.
Are they the size
of
like?
You're from the South, and you never
well,
had
the,
a
tick.
I grew up in Wisconsin originally, so I mean, I should have had them. But like, I'm thinking about like here we have chiggers. Similar to those, or like fruit fly size, or I've never had. I've been eaten alive. I mean, I look like I was a buffet lunch for something or other, but I'm not really. I don't know. Would I feel it? Would you feel it if you had a tick?
That was a guy from the gay pride parade that said you look like lunch, but anyhow, that's a different thing. No, the deer ticks are small. They're the ones that carry Lyme disease. But, I mean, don't let that fool you. The one that just about killed me was what's called the Lone Star tick, which is a larger tick with a white spot on it. I got Ehrlichia from that thing. And, boy, that about did me in. It was as bad as malaria.
Creepy.
Nasty stuff. Yeah. A number of people have died from it. Anyhow, but the deer tick, if I had to give you a size on it, a really big sesame seed, that would be my comparison, a really large sesame seed, reddish-brown in color. But other ticks carry other varieties of illness, and believe me, Lyme disease is nothing to mess with. The more we learn about it, the more troublesome it is. And the fact that you can get chronic Lyme, but they can't get rid of. They're even using blood phoresis to try and do it, where they take the serum out and essentially clean out all your serum and put new serum back in you, kind of like getting an oil change. They save the cells, the blood cells themselves, but they get rid of all your serum and then put it back in. Some people it works on, some people it does not. That organism gets into just about every part of your body, including your spinal cord and your brain. It's bad stuff.
Growing up in the South, we had a pretty much a standard uniform for the summertime, and it was always a white T-shirt and white shorts or khaki shorts so you could see the tick crawling on you. You removed your clothing, including your socks and shoes if you had any on, at the back door. And I don't mean to make this sound like you were ritualistically inspected in an inappropriate way, but you were looked over just to see if there was a tick crawling on you.
What do I know?
And then in the evenings, I remember having long hair. The ladies would whoever was around, it might be my mother or my grandmother, whoever, that put the children in the floor and run a comb through their hair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean,
the other thing is putting rubber bands around the cuffs on your pants if you're wearing long pants, and putting rubber bands around your sleeves, that'll help. Sublimed sulfur, which is sulfur powder, is an effective repellent for ticks, as is tea tree oil. Both of those work pretty well. The old timers used to put sulfur in a sock, and then they'd bang the sock against them and sort of powder themselves up. And it worked pretty darn well. It still does. I use sulfur here and there, although I make up my own mixture of tick repellent that works really damn well with cedar oil and a number of other essential oils. Lemon is something they don't much like, lemon oil, and they certainly don't like tea tree oil or any of the eucalypt aromatics. Cedarwood is a repellent to them. And there are a number of others that work pretty well. So if you're going to make your own stuff, you can make it with oils, but put some alcohol in it so it disperses well and stays in place. If you just put it on as oil, you're going to sweat it off pretty quickly. The alcohol helps to seal things up and keep it on you a little longer, and it's easier to apply.
I have a question. This may be just a logistics question, but here are my thoughts. If I'm going to be, if I'm just running to Kroger or something, I'll wear shorts and, whatever. But if I'm going to be outside for any good period of time, I always will wear boots and jeans just because I don't want to get eaten up. And it's just too many times. Even sitting on the front porch for, 20 minutes with a glass of wine last Friday, I'm still itching with bites and all this. So I'm pretty good about it. But I wonder about this. Are they more likely to come from below you, or are they going to – because I always wondered, when people say, I found them in my hair. Did they crawl up there?
Okay.
Are they falling from trees? Where are they getting – how can a tick move? If it's on a deer or around here more likely a hog or, whatever they travel on, can they jump? Can they fly? Do they have little wings?
That's a much better question than you have any idea. It's not only worth asking.
You get a big, shiny trophy.
You get a big, big gold star for that question. We will address that in our next show. But that is, in some cases, somewhat of a mystery.
My life could be on the line.
Yeah, well, it is somewhat of a mystery. But ticks get around so much better than you would possibly imagine. They sense carbon dioxide. And they do some incredible things to get on you. And they can come from above, they can come from the side, they can come from the bottom. They're hanging out everywhere. And they can go without food,
like ninjas,
by the way, for about a year. So think about that as far as they're not going to die off just because they don't bite you and get some of your blood. All right, everybody, it's time for us to go away. Enough ticks for the day. Hell no, don't let people out there abuse you in your life when you're just trying to live by yourself and be peaceful. And hell yes, do some good things for somebody else. Good night, everybody.
Right, and watch out for goofy propaganda filling your head. Learn how to change tires. Go eat hot dogs.
Learn how to think critically.
Think critically. And if you find $187,000, go get you a shovel and bury it in the backyard. Amen.
Or call Nick. He'll take care of it for you.
See y'all later.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, good night.
Bye. Good night.